I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. Athletes get a lot of attention when they announce that they are retiring. Five-time NBA champion Kobe Bryant is ending his basketball career and composed a touching poem to the game he has loved, Dear Basketball. And while he and other professional athletes make a lot of money when they are employed, many of them are in financial straits shortly after retirement. And the retirement picture for the rest of us is equally as worrisome. Half of workers do not have a retirement plan through their job. In fact, half are not putting aside anything for retirement. And if you're relying solely on Social Security, the average benefit is less than $16,000 a year, not much to live on. That's why many in their 60s can't afford to retire and are working into their 70s and beyond. Today on Radio Times, preparing financially and emotionally for retirement. And we have two guests who have joined us. Robert Lara writes a nationally syndicated column for Forbes.com and Financial Advisor magazine. He's also the founder of RetirementProject.org. And Robert Lara, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks. Appreciate the opportunity to be on.
Absolutely. Carol Heimowitz is with us as well, editor-at-large for Bloomberg News. And Carol, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks so much.
Carol, let me begin with you. And just going back to my intro here, looking at some of the facts and figures of Americans in retirement, is it that Americans do not or cannot plan for retirement adequately?
It's a combination. We've had a major switch from pensions to 401k plans, which require employees to take charge and save most of their retirement. So that's very hard for a lot of people to do, given what their income is. Depends on what it is and whether they have a good plan. And then you have 50% of people in private sector companies have no plan whatsoever.
Put the same question to you, Robert Lara. What does it say about Americans and, I guess, Americans in retirement?
Yeah, there's really a savings crisis going on. People are, you know, it's really the first time the baby boomer generation is the first group that doesn't have, you know, a pension to rely on. And that kind of switcheroo took place right in the part of their career where they were, you know, just kind of getting their family started and their careers running. And so a lot of people are being caught off guard on the requirements, and it's not an easy place to navigate. And so there's a lot of challenges ahead for people.
I do want to talk more about the financial aspect, but I do want to begin by focusing more on some of the psychological issues. And Robert, I was looking at some of the things that you have written, and you say there are three questions that people should ask themselves, or you want them to ask themselves. One is, what would a perfect retirement look like? What would it look like if you had 5 years to live? And what would it look like if you had 24 hours to live? Why those three questions?
Well, the process is to narrow down what's important to you about retirement. People, you know, picture retirement as this idyllic time that where it's just easy and everything is great. But there's a lot of challenges that come with it. And people get so focused on money that they forget about the personal aspects. And there's a lot of stress and anxiety surrounding how much do I need to save? How can I withdraw? But when you really step back and start to identify what's most important to you about retirement, it's much easier to plan and develop a picture of what it's really going to be like instead of just these general projections. And that process just forces people to narrow down to say, hey, family, my health, all those things are important instead of saving this dollar amount. Because quickly, what most people tend to do is put off what's most important to them to save money. Then they get to retirement, realize they don't have any of that stuff.
And also that question that people are asked when they retired after, let's say, a long career working, which is, so what do you do? Is that an important question, Robert?
It is, because a lot of times people confuse who they are with what they do. And it can catch people off guard because, again, just the general assumption of what does it mean to be in retirement, that's in the process of changing. But a lot of times people don't have an elevator speech to kind of identify who they are or what's important to them, so they can end up lost and kind of wandering around for years.
What do you think, Carol?
I agree with a lot of that. I think one of the things that's truly changing is a lot of people are going to have more time than their parents did, not everyone. And it's totally unpredictable, right? Because the one thing you can predict is when you're going to die. But many people will have a good 20 years after they hit 65. So they might not just have one retirement. They might have two or three. They might have a first one where they're working part-time. They might have a second where they're doing a volunteer thing that they've really always wanted to. But the most important thing is before you hit that age to really think about what are the things you truly want to do before you have no time to do them. Is it travel? Is it spending more time with your children? Is it giving back to your community? Is it staying working? For some people, it is that.
Well, and I have to say, I know some people who are struggling with retirement and some people who are having the time of their life, Carol. I mean, they have their health and that helps. They've saved some money. That also helps as well. But saying I'm busier now than I ever was and enjoying myself more than I ever did when I had my career.
That is true. And a lot of those people did not define themselves by their job, I think. I think the people who have the hardest transition time were very invested in their job. That meant a lot to them. And it takes a good year or two after leaving a job like that to find your grounding. Other people jump right off and say, wow, I have my own time now. I'm going to take a painting course. I'm going to take a writing course. I'm going to go to the movies in the afternoon. Mm. So those people have a jump start. But it's a long time, though.
It is a long time. And Robert, you've done a number of interviews with athletes, for instance, and I would think for an athlete, that particular question, what do you do? And then what do you do with your time? And you're probably in your 30s or maybe early 40s, and you have retired. And I'm wondering what we can learn from some of these athletes.
Okay. It's a great – that's why the topic was so important to me because, you know, when people are in their 50s and 60s, it might be a little bit easier to kind of figure those things out. But to have someone who's in their early 30s or even 20s have to kind of re-identify themselves, especially after such a great career, can be very difficult. And different athletes have handled it very differently. You know, you talked about Kobe Bryant at the outlet at the beginning. What's interesting about his situation is now the talk is how does he get bigger and better than what he already has done? And so that's a lot of pressure to put on someone or for him to feel that, gosh, I won 5 NBA championships. I've been the MVP. I've been all these amazing things. And now we still got to do more. And so what's important for people to really start to take a look at, I think Deion Sanders said it best, is, you know, don't fall in love with the game because the game can't love you back. And that's what's important about your career. You can't fall in love with your career, and you want to be able to walk away from it before it walks away from you.
Carol, I'm also thinking, kind of segueing from that to especially some people from who were forced to retire because of the recession. They lost their job. They have not been able to get back in the workforce. This is not retirement by planning or decision. It's really something was forced upon somebody. And here they are sort of dealing with the fact that they're not working.
And that is very tough. But one of the things that's starting to happen is many of those people are jumping into what I call the gig economy, what's being called the gig economy. A quarter of Uber drivers are seniors.
Really?
So many people are running Airbnbs. There are an enormous number of people who did get shoved out of corporate jobs in their 50s who can't get another full-time job, but they are finding part-time contract work. If they really need to work, they can do it.
And are they feeling some degree of satisfaction with this? Do we know that?
Yes, some of them are. A lot of them are. I mean, they're realizing they don't have to just sit and look at the wall when they need some money coming in. They can take some control.
Do you want to jump in on that? That was interesting. I didn't know that that high a percentage of Uber drivers were, in a sense, some of these laid off people or even retirees.
Well, it's a great point, and it's something that people have to kind of add to their retirement plan. Not only the potential to be forced forced into retirement, but the potential to work part-time because, you know, when I first got into the business as a financial planner, when you hit 50, 55, you were in your prime earning years. You were on cruise control heading to retirement. You didn't have to worry. The kids were out of the house, and you could save more money than ever before. Now when a 55-year-old comes into my office, they're worried, am I going to be able to keep my job, and what are the next 10 years going to look like? And so you start to have to change your focus and not be negative about it, but say, how can I start to transition out if those things were to happen?
And Robert, have you started planning for your retirement?
Absolutely.
What have you done?
Well, I think the big thing for me that when I look out there, one of my favorite things that I, you know, get to do is to write. And it's something that you can always do. I'm one of those busy people, and so I don't ever think just be done. but always maintain an office, be able to write. And part of my goal is to continue to write books about retirement and other things so that as I transition away from money management and financial planning in the stock market, I'm going to rely on speaking, books, and other things to generate some income.
How about for you, Carol?
Some of my planning is the same. I love writing. I plan to write different things than I have as a journalist, though, and I'm already starting to do that, more memoir, a little bit more fiction, perhaps. I'm also involved in a couple of nonprofits, just on a volunteer basis. And I'd really like more time to exercise.
Wouldn't we all? But, I mean, what I hear from both of you is, I guess, something called phase retirement, which is not an official, I'm going from 50 hours a week to zero, but sort of this slow, phase out of the workforce, Carol?
That's right. And one of the things I've heard, there's an organization called Encore.org that's comprised of a lot of people 55 and older who have had one kind of career, and then they reach a certain age and they're saying, I want to do something that's more social purpose. And many of these people have formed small nonprofits doing everything from education in inner city with kids to theater groups to food banks. What's interesting is most people don't make an enormous abrupt change from what they've already done. Huh. So you have one person who was a food executive who's now created this food bank. Most of us build on what we already know. It's rare to go from A to Z.
I'm also thinking, Robert, about a minute before our first break here, and for some people, hitting that retirement age is also a time of illness, diagnoses, you know, oftentimes the health just isn't what it was when you were a younger person.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of people don't think about their social style, what their health is going to be like. They've got these very vague ideas. And so it's critical for people to step back and start to develop the lifestyle they want to live in retirement now instead of later. Because like you're saying, a lot of people get there and realize they're not as capable or they're not as connected. And so that's why I agree with Carol. I think there's a big transition towards this phase retirement because people, you end up being healthier and feeling better, more well-being if you're connected to people and you're active instead of sitting around staring at the wallpaper.
Should millennials start planning for retirement?
Absolutely. Actually, I think millennials start to have it right. A lot of millennials I know are doing types of phased work. They're not spending, you know, 50 or 60 hours a week, you know, at one job. They're doing things that they like, but they're also enjoying life. And so they're striking a better balance than most other generations.
Well, we are hold on to that thought, Carol, only because we're up on a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation talking about retirement, planning for retirement, whether psychologically. We'll talk more about financially as well. Robert Laura writes a syndicated column for Forbes.com, Financial Advisor Magazine, also founder of RetirementProject.org. Carol Heimowitz is editor-at-large for Bloomberg News, and we want you to join the conversation. Any questions or comments for us, that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moskowing talking about retirement with Carol Heimowitz and Robert Laura. And again, you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. Carol, I heard you take a breath right before the break. Anything you want to add?
Sure. We were talking about millennials and whether they're preparing for retirement. And one of the things you can say about that generation is having watched their parents, they have no doubt that they're going to have to save for their own retirements. So while many of this generation has high student loan debt, there's a high percentage who are putting as much as they can away into a 401k or into an IRA.
Well, let's talk about that. And in my intro, and Carol, some of my intro was taken from some of what you have written about. But for instance, half of workers do not have a retirement plan through their job. I'm assuming for many of those people, that means either they aren't or perhaps even can't afford to have their own private retirement plan or account. What do you suggest they do?
Well, everyone can have an IRA, which means you get to put a certain amount of money per year. I think it's about
$5,000
a year, pre-tax money into an IRA that you can set up yourself. So everyone can do that. What you don't get without your company 401 is you don't get a company match. So you're doing it entirely on your own, and you can't save as much pre-tax.
But, and that's about $100 a week, something like that.
That's right. The problem is, it's even if you do that steadily, you might not ever add up enough for what you might need if you live a long life.
And how do you know, Robert, Laura, how do you know how much you're going to need in retirement, knowing you don't know how long you're going to live and all the other variables?
It's a delicate balance because, you know, there's also the other side of what happens if you don't live for a long time. How do you spend it down? It really is a matter of, it's not as difficult as people make it out to be, though. When you start to look at, you know, what's my current cost to maintain my lifestyle? What kind of lifestyle do I want to have in retirement? Subtract out what you can get from Social Security, and you can come up with some pretty quick numbers. And what I emphasize, especially for young people or even anyone who feels like they're behind those, to focus on creating a savings habit, because it can be daunting to run your numbers and see, gosh, I need $500,000 or $750,000. I'm never going to get there. But it's important just to start and then start, you know, building up that habit and discipline. You'll get there much easier that way than worrying about getting there, which is what most people tend to do.
And I was reading that you need in retirement something like 60 to 70% of your pre-retirement income. Do I have that right, Robert?
That's the general rule of thumb, but I often find that people are able to make adjustments below that. And that's very reassuring because I've had plenty of couples who are, you know, combined six-figure earners, you know, in the $100,000 to $200,000 that can live on $50,000 or $60,000. I think it's important to step back and say, there's other important ways to look at saving and preparing for retirement. The first is paying off your house, being debt-free. And then, as kind of Carol has alluded to, you know, doing something with the gig economy, because, again, you don't have to make $2,000 or $3,000 a month, but if you can do something you enjoy and you like and generate an extra $400 or $500, that can go a long way in retirement.
Carol, you want to add to that?
Sure. There are also many people downscaling. They're moving from selling off a house. Maybe they do love it, but they're moving to a less expensive part of the country. There's a lot of that going on, or less expensive housing if they haven't been able to pay off the house. So there is a lot you can maneuver.
I'm thinking, though, I mean, we have so many people in this country that are, quote unquote, the working poor, which, you know, is almost it's so hard to say that, because the thought of people working one or two jobs and remaining poor is just pretty horrifying. But for a lot of people, Carol, I mean, they don't make enough money to be able to save anything.
The people who are actually having the hardest time are the middle class, and certainly the lower middle class. And I'm talking about families that might make about $50,000 to $100,000. I mean, the poor are going to probably be able to replace a lot of what they earn on Social Security. They are not going to live well,
right,
but they are getting back in Social Security about what they're earning. It's that middle class group that's been trying to send their kids to college, buy a home. They're the people who are hurting the most.
And going back to when Social Security was created, Carol, which was to address the problem of poverty among the elderly in this, or the retired people in this country, which, you know, a couple of generations ago, that was a serious problem.
That was, and it was designed as a safety net for that $50,000 to $100,000 or $120,000 family. Social Security is not going to replace what you've been earning. So you have a choice. You either keep working,
right,
you downscale what you're doing if you haven't saved. It's those two choices.
But as you said, you know, I said in my intro, you know, $16,000 a year isn't much to live on. But for a lot of people, they've been used to living on that because that's how much money they've been making.
Right.
Anything you want to add to that, Robert?
You know, I think a couple things are important. You know, I wrote an article called You Can't Afford to Be Average, which highlights this point that, you know, people who make that $50,000, $60,000, you know, now they're faced with rising health care costs. You know, they're not going to necessarily, you know, get a subsidy. And so a lot of the money they could be saving for retirement will likely go to health care costs or to college funding. Kids are taking longer to launch out of the home. And so there's a lot of challenges associated with that whole middle group. And I also think from the perspective of Social Security, you know, when it was established, you know, the life expectancy for people was 63.
Right.
And now you bumped up to 85 and 87 for men and women. And so there's going to be some changes to come to that as well. But I think the general conversation, you guys are correct, that anybody, you know, below that $100,000 mark is really going to struggle to have this giant nest egg that you can just sit around and retire on.
I mean, Carol, this is really, it's not a family decision necessarily, but I'm assuming when a family member retires, it can reverberate throughout the family.
Absolutely. And one of the things that can actually help that not enough people are doing is holding off on collecting Social Security, because you get a huge benefit if you don't take it early at 62 and don't take it even at full retirement age, but wait till 70. That can almost double what you're going to get.
Wow.
And people really, very, very few people are waiting. And because they think, oh, well, I'm going to die anyway, so I might as well get it now. But, well, they might be living till 90.
But they also might not make it to 70. I mean, that's the kind of gamble, I guess,
it's
that
a gamble.
People are playing.
Right.
Let me just quickly reintroduce the two of you. That's Carol Heimowitz, and she's editor-at-large for Bloomberg News. Also with us, Robert Lara, writes nationally syndicated columns for Forbes.com, Financial Advisor Magazine, founder of RetirementProject.org. And we are talking about the financial and psychological issues related to retirement. 1-888-477-9499. And I read a fairly interesting little piece of information. 10,000 boomers turn 65 every day. They're not necessarily retiring, but that gives you a sense of what's happening generationally in this country. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me get some callers in, and I got a lot of comments I want to read as well. Mark from, looks like Greenwich, New Jersey. Mark, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, I just wanted to say I retired a year and a half ago, and I had studied it for quite a few years before that. I learned from my dad, who retired, sat in a chair for a year, and passed away, to develop a lot of outside interests, meetup groups. I'm out all the time kayaking and volunteering and doing things to keep active. And the other thing is to make a commitment to yourself to work out daily, maintain your health, and be able to enjoy it. And if you are able to work like that, you'll have a great time.
And Mark, how old are you? I'm just curious.
61.
61. So how old were you when you retired?
59 and a half.
Robert, he's talking about what you do with your time when you retire. You want to speak to that?
Yeah, I think he's got it nailed perfect, you know. And what's important is he took the time beforehand. And that's where I think a lot of people, you kind of approach retirement the wrong way. And what I find with a lot of the people I interact with in my workshops and other things is they're at retirement and they're like, oh my gosh, I'm finally here. Now what do I do? And it's very difficult to establish new habits in retirement. There's no magical dust that makes you more motivated than before, but it's what most people do. They say, well, I'm going to start walking or exercising and eating healthier. Well, it's not any easier, so it's important, like Mark was saying, to establish your habits beforehand instead of waiting until you get there.
Mark, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let me see what Robert from Skipack has to say. Hi, Robert. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, I retired from the Navy, 25 years ago.
Wow.
And I started out well-planned. I knew what I was going to do. I had a job offer and all that sort of thing, and it all fell through. And it took me about 9 years to get settled in. And I was lucky to have an education. I became a professor in a university, and that was my retirement job, so I really didn't retire. I just switched over. And now I'm 79 years old, and I am retired. Now, that's my first comment. The second one, real quick, is I've had a heart bypass. I've had lung problems. I've had my back surgery about 7 times. The thing is, medical science is keeping me alive, and I don't know how long I'm going to be retired. I could live to be 100 if I still had the good doctors. So I'll just pass that on. I'll
sure.
take it off the air.
I mean, Robert, are you enjoying your life?
I am. I'm having a good time. One thing I did after I fully retired is I joined the Senior Citizens Club here, and I go about 4 days a week for exercise and companionship, and I don't feel like I'm old enough to be in the senior citizens, but they have so many activities that it's just fun to do.
Well, that's
so
great.
Anyway, I'll go off and let you comment on that.
Well, we're going to talk all about you when you hang up. Robert, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Carol, you want to respond to Robert's story?
I think he said something very interesting. He has companionship. He has people that he connects with. That is so important. It's probably the most important thing. The second thing he talked about was having made a career change after a first retirement. And many, many people are doing that, even at an older age than he probably did it.
He also described, it sounds like he must have retired pretty young. After the Navy. After the Navy, and I think you can do that. But also that it took some time to get the professorship job that seemed to be the one that, you know, worked out for him.
Right.
So it kind of, I mean, and you don't know. It's really hard looking for a job. It doesn't matter how old you are. It's really hard to be either unemployed or looking for work.
Well, I think you just have to be able to say it does take time, and maybe the older you are, the more time it might take. But I have talked to a lot of people who needed to work after they were 65, and the ones who hung in there got jobs, part-time, something, sometimes full-time.
Robert, you want to add to that? I'm interested in when the other Robert was talking about, Carol mentioned, hit the fact that there can be loneliness with being retired.
There's an interesting statistic I came across that says, you know, most people during an average day have 22 high quality interactions. They're face to face, they're person to person. But when you retire, that number can get cut in half and go to actually low quality interactions by phone or email. And so that's one of the biggest things that people don't realize is how are they going to stay relevant and connected? And sometimes it means getting out there. You've got to really look at your social style, too. A lot of times I ask people, when's the last time you made a new friend? And you don't really think about when was the last time you really connected with someone new and you kind of took steps down that path towards friendship. Most people haven't done it in years, and that gets magnified if you decide to relocate or do other things. And so you've got to look at, you know, it's so focused on look at your asset allocation, when to take Social Security, but you got to look at that stuff as well. One more quick point about the work. The other thing I find with part-time work and retirees is they're unrealistic. They want to work Tuesdays and Thursdays from 11:30 to 2:30 p.m. Well, there aren't going to be jobs like that. And a lot of times if you step outside of your career field, you might go from $20 or $30 an hour down to 11 or 12. And so, again, it's about being realistic and looking at the stuff before you jump into it.
And you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY. Let me get Hollis from, looks like Wilmington, Delaware, to join us. Hi, Hollis. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi there.
This is a really good time to bring me in.
Good.
I've founded a platform called Reinvention Works. And what I've done is I've talked to more than 50 people, some of whom are either approaching retirement or in retirement, and some of whom are just career changers who have reinvented themselves. And so one of the things that I have found is that it is about a mindset and preparing for that mindset because it's radical. People don't think about, we were just talking about the loss of companionship or being a part of a team, all the things that have been part of their lives in their workforce that they take for granted, and the idea of remaining relevant, like who am I once I leave that job, because the sense of identity is connected with their job. So I think a lot of people aren't prepared mentally. You talked about, you know, the psychological part of retirement, and I think that there's still a lot more work that can be done to prepare people for what it feels like either to leave the workforce for retirement or be faced with. I've been talking to people who are kind of now deferring to retirement because they got laid off and they can't find something and they're like 59, 60.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I guess I'll do early retirement because the finding a new job is too hard. And I'm pretty depressed about that.
Sure.
So,
well, yeah,
I
no.
Hollis, I would just share that.
No, I'm really glad you did, Hollis. Thanks for calling into Radio Times. And Robert, she used the word, you know, what it feels like. I mean, what it feels like to be in this situation.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting, one of the things I do and encourage people to do, too, is write down what does your perfect day and your perfect week look like. And what's interesting is people really struggle. When you have to put on a piece of paper, what does every day in retirement, morning, afternoon, and evening look like? They have no idea. And they're flabbergasted by the fact that, well, I was going to volunteer and I was going to do this group. Well, that just took you 8 hours of your entire week. What are you going to do with the rest of the time? And so I do think that as we look at the retirement landscape, it's not only just about talking about the dollars and cents, but advisors, retirement plans have a responsibility to start educating people on these other aspects, because if you get there and you got a bunch of money, nothing else, you're not going to enjoy it.
Well, I'm thinking, Carol, too, that for people that work so much organizes your day, when you get up, you know, when you go out the door, when you come home, when you take care of all your non-work activities. You take that away and you got a lot of time stretching in front of you.
Absolutely. And that's why having other interests is so important. I think one thing I wanted to say is that while I do think it's important to plan, what people also have to realize is you're going to go through a period of uncertainty. And experimentation, if you can turn the uncertainty into experimentation, the people I know who are happiest, who are retired and not working, have tried various things and didn't stick with everything.
Right.
And they said, this is a time for me to be a little bit like an adolescent again and just say, I'm going to try this and then maybe I'll try that. But they do know that they need purpose in their lives. They need community in their lives. And they really have to figure out what's very important to them.
And that can take time sometimes.
Absolutely. Everybody says it takes at least a year or two.
A year or two to kind of figure all that out. Well, let's take another short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation talking about retirement with Carol Heimowitz and Robert Laura. We're going to take a short break and get back to our conversation. I see a bunch of people want to join the conversation, so do stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. And if you are just joining us, we are talking about retirement, how to plan for it psychologically, how to plan for it financially. And again, our guests are Carol Heimowitz, editor-at-large for Bloomberg News, Robert Laura, syndicated columnist for Forbes.com and Financial Advisor Magazine, founder of RetirementProject.org. Let me read a couple of comments here, and then I have a question that's also a comment. An email from Val says, unfortunately or fortunately for those that spend a life as savers, the path to retirement can be relatively easy. For those that live a life as spenders, the path to retirement will be difficult. There are a large number of people in my age and socioeconomic class that always live at or above their means without saving. Email from Megan. I wound up leaving a full-time job in 2013 with a good retirement plan because of chronic health issues. I saw myself becoming more ill if I stayed in the job and opted to leave. I value my long-term health over retirement security and will continue to make decisions based on that value. An email from Cody says, I'm 23 years old, recently got a decent paying job at a manufacturing company. Everyone keeps telling me to put my money into a 401k. However, I feel as though I could do better with my money now by investing in myself, i.e. starting my own business. I plan on that future business to take me through retirement if I'm still alive at 45 years old. Am I wrong to do this? Let me just pick up on the 401k part of what he's saying. And Carol, I'll toss that first to you. Should people that work in a company that has a 401k, should they take advantage of that?
Absolutely. And the person who wrote that email could put that money into a Roth IRA, get the company match, and then if he decided he wanted to start his own business and really wanted to use that money, he could withdraw it without a penalty. So there, he might as well take advantage of it now and start using it and then see what happens.
Yeah. And do all companies match or
not? All do, but a lot do.
But a lot do. Robert, what do you think?
Yeah, you know, I think the important thing is, again, is just I would put a little bit in there, because even if you just put 1% of your salary, you're not going to miss it. And so by establishing it and then kind of looking at it each year. Now, I will say the challenge for most people, though, is I think it's also important to have a regular savings account, because all too often what happens is people force feed their 401k and then they use it as a piggy bank later on, taking loans against it and being double taxed on it. And so you got to strike a balance. But I do like the young man's idea of starting a business. But again, you don't have to allocate all your extra savings towards that business, because again, most businesses tend to slow down, or not saying it will fail, but to balance out and kind of diversify in all three. Start the business, have an outside savings, and have a 401k, and kind of build towards it that way.
Carol, I remember the president talking about my retirement account, MIRAs, I think they're called. This would be to help low-income people save money. What happened to that? Where is that program?
That program didn't take off that well. I mean, I think it is moving along, but I'm not sure it's been fully implemented. What's starting to happen instead is many states are setting up IRA programs for people who have no 401ks at work, where they will automatically take money out of your paycheck.
Wow.
And you don't get a match, but you at least are putting it away. So the state programs, and even President Obama has started to support the state programs over that MIRA.
And is that just because people either don't think about it, don't want to give up some of their money for some future that
exactly.
they can't predict?
It's hard at the end of the year. Anyone at the end of the year or any time in the year can say, here's the $5,000 I'm putting into the IRA. But it's very hard to do that. It's so much easier to have it taken out of your paycheck regularly.
I think, Robert, too, some people that have put money aside and perhaps have it in a 401k or some kind of a program or investment program for the future are nervous about the stock market. What do you put your money in stocks? Do you put it in bonds? Is there a straight answer to that?
It's not. And I think, you know, a lot of times it's just, you know, what I tell people is nobody cares more about your money than you. And while there's not going to be a perfect stock market mix, it's really understanding the questions to ask and looking at it for the long term. For the people closest to retirement, the most important way to reduce stock market volatility is to have enough cash on hand to maintain your standard of living for 2 or 3 years, because that allows the market to ebb and flow back and forth. You don't have to sell at the wrong point. For young people, when you look at the stock market historically, it performs well in 5 and 10 year increments. And sometimes it's the best way to look at it, looking out long term instead of the day to day, because it can get very unnerving and hard to manage. But again, the focus on the long term and having the right cash allocations can make a big difference.
Carol, thinking about these bonds, and I read that the percentage of bonds you should have should match your age. I mean, as you get older, I guess you go more towards bonds, but the interest rates are so low.
Yes, and that formula is changing. And right now you're only getting 1%, maybe 2% on bonds the most.
Right.
And so certainly for people who need to live on that income as retirees, it's been very tough. Now, one new financial instrument out there that can help a lot of people who don't want to futz with the market too much are what's called target date funds. And they're being offered in most 401ks. They're available in IRAs. And whoever is, whether it's a Vanguard Target or a Fidelity or a BlackRock, they figure out your mix of what you should have based on how old you are and when you're likely to retire. And it means you don't have to do the allocation as much.
And you get more than 1 or 2%, hopefully?
Usually. Well, you're in a mix of stock and bonds. Yes, it's a mix. But they're figuring out what the mix is. And generally, those funds have done fairly well for people who don't want to deal at all with, I don't know where to put my money.
Interesting. How about an annuity? Should people think about that, Carol?
Most people are saying you really don't want to think about that until you're older. I'm going to defer to Robert on that one.
Yeah, what do you think, Robert?
You know, annuities have their place. And a lot of times, you know, it's a very hot topic, you know, from just a perspective of, because there's very different types of annuities. There's variable, there's index, there's immediate. Annuities have a place in an investment portfolio, but it's not always the place that a product salesperson may put you. Variable annuities can have very high expense ratios. Index annuities can have market caps. And so it's one of those things that if you understand them and you're comfortable with them, they can work great. But they are very complex instruments that may not make sense. The other challenge, I prefer immediate annuities, but with interest rates so low, it's hard to get the rate of return that you really need. And so there are some challenges, like you said, with bonds, with immediate annuities, because rates are so low and they're expected to go up, balancing out those risks.
Let me get back to our callers at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email. I see a bunch of people have radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me get Jerry from Bensalem to join us. Hi, Jerry. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I have a question regarding retirement account. This is I'm 42 and I work for a nonprofit. And we currently only have a 403B available, which I'm paying into. And when I get my statements, they're usually indicating I'm going to have a minimal amount of money saved by the time I'm retirement age. And we don't get too much salary on a regular basis. What can someone like me do to ensure that my retirement, I'm ready for that?
And you're saying, Jerry, at a nonprofit, not much of a salary, and it doesn't sound like this 403B is giving you much of a savings.
403B is just where you put the money away and it gets saved for you. And since, you know, the salary isn't that great, you really can't put away that much money every pay period. It kind of puts you in a position where I'm just uncertain of how to handle when I get to retirement.
Sure. And can I ask how much you make? Or ballpark-ish?
I make under $50,000.
You make under $50,000. Robert,
I had to get a graduate. I have to have a graduate's degree and a license to perform my position, which is interesting.
It is.
Me in the nonprofit field are reimbursed so lowly for what we're required to have.
Yeah, I certainly understand what you're talking about, Jerry. Let me give Robert a chance to weigh in, and we'll give Carol a chance to do the same. Robert, what should Jerry do?
Well, what I did, when I got out of college, I was actually a social worker. And so I was in that field for 10 years, and I was faced with going back and getting a $30,000 master's degree for a 50-cent raise or switching careers. And I opted to step over to the financial services because of the relationship building. It was really a simple transition. Obviously, there's some upside, but it really is about examining, you know, kind of where you're at and where you want to be. And so stepping back to say, is the nonprofit sector the place to stay? Is there an opportunity to, you know, on the weekends or, you know, kind of moonlight or get into that gig economy and turn a passion or a hobby into, you know, just a few extra bucks? And then, again, by setting up a separate gig or passion kind of business, allocating all that money to another retirement account to help you build towards it. And so it's about, I think a lot of times when people come to retirement, people are afraid to be creative, and that's really what you got to do. Get with some friends and brainstorm some ideas and get creative about how you can get there.
Jerry, thanks for the call to Radio Times, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY. Carol, though, are there other options that Jerry has besides his 403B?
Well, 403B is usually basically the nonprofit version of a 401k. So it's analogous, and I don't know if his nonprofit matches. I mean, one question I'd have for him is if he absolutely loves his job and he can live on that $50,000, and he's 43.
Mm-hmm.
If he tries to save just a little bit more probably per year, he might over time. He's got a good 20 years here. Build it up and be able to have enough that he's going to match. He's going to have 70% of that salary when he retires. But as Robert is saying, he's got to weigh, am I just feeling too strapped as it is and I really want a career with more money?
Right.
Or no, I love this. And if he keeps saving at his age, he might be able to get 60-70% of his income with Social Security when he retires.
Well, thanks for the call. Let me see what Janet from Newtown Square has to say. Hi, Janet. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. Thank you. More of an intrinsic, I guess, value of retirement was for me. We actually moved here from Center City, being there for 30 years. And when we moved out here in Newtown Square, I had no knowledge of gardens and plants and trees, zero. And I thought, well, I have an opportunity now to learn something new. And that's this benefit of retirement. You can kind of move into something, and this may have been spoken about before, something completely new. But for me, I moved into the area of the environmental group here, a part of our township. And the incredibly wonderful thing, besides meeting people, getting more FaceTime and being active and learning new skills like grant writing and so on, is this whole world, sort of unknown world I didn't even know existed, of seminars and nonprofits in the area and that have events and meetings, and you're learning. And, you know, we've been here 6 years, and it's been like 0 to 60 in a couple of years of understanding the importance of buffers and trees and runoff issues and things like that that are so important in this area. And
well, you know what, Jen, only because we hear the enthusiasm in your voice, and clearly you made a good move, I guess, both out of the city and into the suburbs, but also finding this whole other world for yourself. And that makes me wonder, both to you, Carol, and to you, Robert, is it time to retire the word retirement? I mean, it just sort of doesn't seem to match what people are thinking, or maybe it has some baggage associated with it. Carol?
I think it is time, and we have to think of a better word for it, because it's exactly what you're describing of finding another purpose, passion, interest that keeps you so engaged that people are doing. And a lot of people are saying, given longevity now, we don't have even a good word for seniors. We don't have a word. There's a lot of people who are 55 to 80 who aren't really old yet. They're not frail. They're not sick. And we have no word for them.
Do you have any words, Robert? Can we rebrand this somehow?
You know, it's the ongoing conversation, but I agree with Carol and you, Marty, that like it's time to just get rid of the word, you know, because it denotes all the wrong things. And again, even when you talk about retirement planning, it assumes you've got to save up this giant nest egg to sit around and do nothing for 30 years. You know, that's not really what retirement's turning into. And what's nice, though, is baby boomers are changing it. And I talk about retirement a lot like an iceberg, because what really goes on has lied below the surface for a long time. But now people are starting to talk about more of these things, how to find your passion and hobby, how to do some other things and make the best of it. And that wasn't always the case before.
Well, and we're almost out of time here, Carol. And it's, you know, you can do a show about the sort of gloom and doom of retirement, the fact that so many people haven't really been able to sock away enough money for it. But on the other hand, I'm also hearing all the potential. And it doesn't mean you have to live like Donald Trump or something.
That's
like
right.
That there are certain joys and sort of existential experiences that can come with being an older person.
Absolutely. It can be a time of great discovery and doing new things or doing something you did delay.
Well, it seems like a perfect place to end our conversation. Carol Heimowitz, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you.
And she's editor-at-large for Bloomberg News. Robert, Laura, thank you very much for joining us as well.
Thanks. I appreciate the time.
Absolutely. And he writes a nationally syndicated column, one for Forbes.com, also Financial Advisor Magazine, also founder of RetirementProject.org. Lots of interest in this topic. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out much more about the program. You can download a podcast of the show. You can find us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter and certainly carry on a conversation that we had started here on the air. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times, and do stay with us for hour two. We'll be right back.